Men, do you want to look and feel good? Let Cimarroni Couture fit you with the finest fabrics and the best fitting custom shirts, pants, sport coats, and suits. We will come to your home or office, or if you want, you can come to us. We look forward to being of service to you. Call Missy, our CEO, at 216-496-2592. That's Cimarroni Couture, 216-496-2592.
Hey, this is Coach Cimarroni for Blood Time. I have a wonderful guest here and a guy that I've admired since he was a young man. Also, a gentleman that's running for Congress, Will Knight, head coach at Shaker Heights High School. How you doing, Will?
I'm good. How you doing, Pete?
Welcome, bro. Good. It's so good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
I remember you as a young wrestler, you know, coaching you when you were wrestling with Pete Nathanson and the boys over at the Red Raiders.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I wrestled... Probably coached against me when I wrestled Ryan Peters in the semis at the Richmond Heights tournament.
Indeed. And we liked our outcome. Yeah. I don't know that if you liked the outcome, but it was a good match, right?
He caught me with his tricky lat pull.
That's right. Stretch that arm out. Man, that's what kind of did him in with his shoulders. Yeah. But that was definitely taught to him by his brother, Scott. Mm. And so we're sitting here with an entire family we love our producer extraordinary, now married man, Mav Peters. How you doing, Mav?
Doing great, Coach.
All right, good to see you. And Will, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Shaker Heights experience. I have an affinity towards that. My dad wrestled for Shaker Heights back in the 50s with Gene Weiss.
Yes, during the state championship run of 54. Right?
Indeed. Well, he graduated in 53.
Oh, so he was.
So he was there. He was there. He was Gene's understudy. Okay. He would kind of bounce around the lineup. And the other cool thing about it was my uncle, my mother's youngest brother, Lenny Arslanian, was the very first captain of the Heights Tigers team. And he was the very first place winner in the history of their school in 1956.
Wow. That's
so great. I got a deep history with, you know, that rivalry, right?
Yes,
and everything,
yes,
you know?
Yes,
so tell me about what it was like. I know that your family initially was not a Shaker family.
No.
Okay. But then they moved into the Shaker district and you matriculated there.
Yes.
Wrestled there. Yeah. And tell me a little bit about that experience.
Well, my parents are, they went, my parents are from Alabama.
Okay.
They met at Miles College, which is in Fairfield, Alabama.
Okay.
And my dad grew up with Willie Mays, actually.
I'll be darned. Yes. Say hey, kid.
Yes, and coincidentally, what you think my name is, we have the same birthday, May 6th.
Oh, my gosh, that is cool. Right? Well, my dad's May 7th, so there's some,
there
hey,
go.
Listen, right?
The there
Heights
we
Tiger.
Go.
I mean, Red Raiders,
yeah.
I like it.
So after my dad got his degree, and my mother did as well, she went to Columbia grad school.
Okay.
Get her master's teaching, and my dad came up to Akron to work in banking because his older brothers were already up here. They had, like, back in the day, you had, like, these opportunities. Like, they truly had trade schools in the early 1900s where you learned shoe shining.
Apprentice. It was a cottage industry.
Cleaning.
Right.
And, like, shoe shine,
dry. You got to get back to that, man.
Yeah,
you got to
get
back to that.
So one of my uncles was a shoe shiner, and my other uncle cut hair, and they moved up north.
Okay.
And my father and father followed him.
Yeah.
And my dad got a job at a bank and was the first black man to get a job in a bank who wasn't a custodian in Ohio.
Oh, that's fantastic. And it's been in your family now with Angela. Your sister just retiring as a banker for what, 30 years or something that? Maybe more.
Yeah, well, because she was in banking and she was like, same thing, like a bank teller when she was 18.
Holy cow.
You know?
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and then.
So that had to be amazing, right? So that you have this father that's really a trailblazer, you know, the lack of a better term, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so there had to be some interesting experiences that did he share some interesting experiences with some of the people that were his contemporaries?
Oh, goodness gracious. Like, there's so many things that, you know, the thing about it, later in his life, my father passed away 3 years ago.
Okay.
And what later in his life, he just truly became like my best friend. Talking to him, just I just got to talk to him for the first time. Right. Like back in the day, you know, boys don't, men don't talk to their sons and news. So, you know, they just it just was different.
Yeah, right.
But it seemed like the last 10, 15 years of his life, like he became one of my best friends. We just talked, you know.
Well,
just,
you became contemporaries. Yeah, I mean, you know, once you hit, you know, 35, you're a fully formed adult, unless you're a knucklehead.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But so in that point, it doesn't matter if you're 35 or 65, there's a lot of commonality. There,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Your life experience.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And it was, it was good. He just, you know, I just remember kind of the first time we had a grown conversation. He's just like, well, he explained James Brown's band to me. He's just like, you know, the key to James Brown greatness is band, you know? Yes. Like, just, I know we're driving along and a James Brown song came on. And I just remember like, oh, okay. And then we just would, and just those little things would just start talking, and he would just tell the stories, the history of
what,
our family.
What an amazing story of James Brown.
Yeah.
I watched Chadwick Boseman do a phenomenal job in that whole, holy cow, what a man.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Good, bad, or indifferent, he was a man.
yeah. So, so then they moved from Akron to East Cleveland, where he was working in a bank. And
what bank?
He started working with like First Ohio Savings and Cleveland Trust.
Okay.
And then what he was doing along East Cleveland, along a Superior kind of corridor, he was giving like minority-based loans to people who couldn't get them. And we had a lot of different stipulations to black and brown people who couldn't get loans. And
a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah, a lot of hoops. Right. And he made those, you know, he didn't make these people jump through these hoops. And a lot of these people, a lot of churchgoers, a lot of these church members, a lot of these people, like, you helped a lot of churches get going and things like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of the older statesmen in the city of Cleveland should, you know,
know my dad.
Yeah.
What's your first, your father's first name?
Herman.
Herman. We love Herman.
Yeah. And then they moved to Shaker in the late 60s, and that's where
you were born what year? Right around 70?
I was born 73.
73. So you literally grew up in Shaker.
Yep.
So you're a Shaker guy.
Yeah, my sister was a senior in high school when I was a fresh, like we all had a sister who was 13 years older, and so she was a senior when I was a freshman. At one point, all of my siblings, we all graduated from Shaker Heights High School.
Great. And, you know, I have a lot of friends from Shaker. My cousin, my first cousins all went to Shaker, and a lot of buddies went to Shaker. And it was always a step ahead of Beechwood in regards to how to really live as a, I don't know, just like a fully formed adult.
Yeah.
You know, just the acceptance. Because Beechwood was really so singular in the type of people that were there.
Yeah.
It was 95% Jewish.
Yeah.
But it was an amazingly similar in that they wanted to be educated.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So was that your experience? That everybody had sort of an open mind and just learning about other people.
Yeah. And ultimately, like when I was talking to a good friend of mine, his name is Oliver Guinness, and he... when I kind of told him that I was running, and he talked about knowing the charter of what Shaker was trying to do.
Okay.
And it was one of those communities that understood that, okay, if we're accepting of different cultures and we help cultivate that talent and their parents participate, let's see what can really happen.
I love that.
Because there's a lot of communities, which is still the case, where they kind of get in the way.
Right.
You know, they get in the way.
They're doing harm.
Yeah, doing harm. Yeah. And
at least do no harm.
Exactly.
right.
And it seemed to me that Shaker just decided, like, what if we don't get in the way?
Yeah.
And then we can kind of encourage and we kind of raise kids as a community as opposed to that part of the community being raised and this part of the community being raised.
Right.
And my family seems to be the culmination of what it can be.
Sure.
Like all seven of us went to college. You know, my oldest sister was an anesthesiologist, and you know my sister Angela, she's a bank exec.
Amazing.
My sister Sheila is a teacher in Maryland. My brother Fred is the head of the history department at Morehouse College.
Wow.
And my brother Mike's a businessman in painting, and my brother Herman is the same. He's a contractor in the D.C. area, owns contracting companies. So
what's your mother's name?
Francis.
We love Herman and Francis.
Yeah, come on.
What a great combination, right? Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about Scott and Debbie, what they've done with those three boys, Maverick, Brock, Francis. And Royce, you know, so absolutely.
Francis was like, you really understand, and, you know, which is kind of tragic. My mother passed a year and a half ago, and what I understand is taking care of a house by myself.
Yeah.
I realized, like, she was very successful in what she did. She was a great teacher. She used to teach Spelling Bee Champions in the Akron and East Cleveland area.
Wow.
And then she sacrificed her career to raise us because Shaker was new. We were the first black Flammy on our street. We were one of the early black Flammies that really weren't Shaker doing, you know, what they, my mother understood she needed to be around because there's a transition from the old Shaker teachers and law enforcement, et cetera, into the new. And then there's
and you experienced some of that.
Exactly.
Right? And before you get into that, I want to tell you that Beachwood too, you know, there's this gallery success and I've been honored to be in it. And the big thing that they want is to graduate entrepreneurs with social conscience. Mm. So I like that. I like that. And I think this is what Shaker's trying to talk about, too.
Yeah. My niece graduated from Beachwood and helped them win their track state championship.
That's right.
Yes. Me and Knight. So,
yeah.
You know,
wow. She was a heck of an athlete.
Yeah. She's at Penn now. So
fantastic.
She's at Penn. Hopefully I can get her back and working on the campaign a little bit.
Yes, right. So. She's definitely a talent, no question about it. But let's talk about that transition between, you know, the old guard of the Shaker police force, Shaker teaching system, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you were right in the middle of that transition, right? So talk about a little bit about what that meant to you.
When it as a kid who was very active in the neighborhood, like, you know, I got out. And when the sun was up, I went and ate my bowl of Frosted Flakes and got on my bike and I was gone.
Right.
You know,
till the sun came down, right?
And until I would take a lunch break at where my mother had a nice kosher bologna sandwich ready for me the Howard's Kosher. Like, you know, coincidentally, next door used to be a kosher market that my dad used to go to.
Okay.
And
I love that.
And I remember
got good
going
meats,
in there.
Man.
Yeah,
you
my
got
dad.
Good
we
meats,
we I've been eating kosher since I've been. And it's kind of crazy.
That's
but,
wild.
But yeah, that was my break at noon. I make a kosher bologna sandwich part of the meat store next door, and then back to Lomond Elementary, back in the plant.
Sure, Lomond.
But within those, a lot of times was when it came to education, I was too smart for my own good at times, and I noticed that with kids I coach.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember being, I really tested really well in math. So what they would do is they would put me in the hall to do math with a couple other kids, and I would kind of be like, oh, I'm out here with the nerds, I guess.
In my 20s.
And I would either do my math so fast to get back in the classroom.
Yes, right.
Hang out with my buddies.
Be with my guys,
Or then it got to a point where I was like, oh, I don't want to do the work anymore. And then just, I didn't really understand that value.
Okay.
But when you're 8, 9, 10, I mean, how do you understand it?
Exactly.
I mean, my mother would keep expressing it, and they would always do. And I did well in school, but I could have done better. Like, I could have focused and really understood, like, you know what? I got to do this, man. But I had a lot of things. Like, I was a social kid. I was good at baseball. I was good at a little bit of everything.
Right.
So I,
so
there were more interest.
Well-rounded.
Yeah. But yeah.
Renaissance man. There you go.
But when it comes to like the law enforcement transition was, I remember there was this one old school officer who we all kind of knew. And he just constantly bothered the black kids. Like, he always was honest. Yeah. And I remember being up at elementary school and he came up, pulled up onto the playground. It was very weird. Like, he came, he pulled in through this fence. It was on the playground, this car. And he started checking bikes, people's bikes.
Wow.
And we're all neighborhood kids. And he just would check if we had our license, if there was like a license on in this thing.
Yeah.
And he saw my, you know.
Just a little bit level, higher level of scrutiny.
Yeah,
right.
I'm just in there. And then what I did, he took up my bike. I don't have a license for it because I was good at putting bikes together, so it would just be parts in my garage, and I'd put a bike together, and it was mine, right?
Yeah, that's right.
But then, you know, I remember he took my bike because it wasn't registered license, and when he
that'd break your heart,
and then what happened was the frame was one of my brother's friend, you know, bike was left in there, and he was just like, so I remember he called and was like, he must have called law enforcement and said, give that dude his bike back. And then I had to get a license.
Oh, my gosh.
And I got that back. And I just remember another time that officer
tried to. Now, that's some hoops to jump through.
Oh, man. My goodness gracious.
Yeah. For a little kid. How old were you?
I was 9, 10.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That kind of probably put sour taste in your mouth.
You need a bike. You have to have a bike if you're a part of our group. You know?
Yes.
But, yeah, so it just, so from that
so
point.
So we get rid of him, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
how was it not?
What happened eventually?
Yeah.
So it came full circle.
Right.
My senior year in high school, I'm studying for government, like a government exam, and I'm, you know, I remember I was coming from we had these twin sisters named the Greenspans. Okay. And I remember they lived up on Shaker Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And I was really good in history. Like, I really, okay. So they were like, Will, can you come by?
Yeah, we are kindred spirits. Yeah. I have a master's in history from John Kerr. I love history.
Yeah, so we were studying for a history exam. And then I just remember leaving, got a stack of books. I have my Shaker Letterman jacket, and I'm pulling over by Shaker
Letterman
Country.
Jacket, yeah, sure,
So I'm pulling over by Shaker Country Club, and then I just remember on Torrington, there's like an easy way to do a rolling stop. I just get pulled over for a rolling stop. And
I remember
seeing him come out. I'm just like, oh
boy.
I remember we all knew what he looked like, and it just turned into like, hey, do you have any weapons? And this, I'm like, I have a stack of books and a Letterman's jacket on, you know, and he pulls me out.
In between my physics, my history.
And that was the first time I went through that process of like, being, you know, kind of just being a little bit harassed. It was weird. I was just like, wait, he didn't see that I have a stack of books and a Letterman's jacket on. Right. And, you know. And I was small too at that, you know, I weighed 125. I wasn't like a big intimidating kid or nothing.
Right.
And me being 16, I looked 14. I looked young for my age too. So I'm like, where is
I get a license.
That should have been more of the question.
Exactly, right. You steal your dad's car or something.
Yeah. So as he, and you know, as we found out that he was gone, you know, there was a shift. You start seeing more African Americans in law enforcement there, and I got to know a lot of them. And then when I get into coaching, you meet these guys because they're working games and things like that.
Oh, God, yeah. One of my best friends is Donnie Ferris, God rest his soul, you know.
You know,
Arab American, and he was fantastic. Some of the stories he told us, and he was, you know.
He was a great official, too.
He was a great official. Yeah, what a story, right?
Yeah, I remember, I think I got the Don Ferris Award at one of the Cleveland.
I'm sure you did. Like, I helped start that.
Yeah,
1996.
Out of college. There was something that I got.
Yeah, we still give those away. I'm the president of the GCWC, and we just gave this. I think we gave the Don Ferris to Sal Perrine.
Oh, great.
Paul Perrine's son. Yeah, and I helped help that process.
Yeah, I've worked with Perrine as well.
He's terrific.
Yeah, he's great.
So let's get back to this and kind of put a little bit of a bow on it.
Yeah.
How was the socialization for you as a high school student? You know, at Shaker, what was that like?
Well, it seemed that the thing that was good about it is that kids were from neighborhoods. They were from, like, we grew up together.
Yeah.
Like, so.
That's what I experienced.
And then we learned, when we got to middle school / junior high, because Shaker, you know, Shaker Middle School was the first year, called Shaker Middle School the first year I was in seventh grade.
Right.
And then you meet kids from other areas, but you might have known them because of Shaker Boys League or something like that.
Yeah.
And then after middle school, you know. But then when you get into high school, you just know the older brothers.
Was it still Byron and
They got rid of that. We were the first year where we had
no Byrons.
Yeah, we were at Byron, which was quote unquote Shaker Middle School, and there was no Woodbury anymore.
Woodbury, right?
Okay. So they kept the building, but it was like it was still used for the swim team was there.
Gotcha.
And that's where our wrestling team practiced.
Right. And who was your head coach?
Dave Semack.
Great guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he coached over at Beachwood. He was a football coach as well, and great guy.
Yeah.
I mean, just a great guy.
Talk about being ahead
guy.
Of the game. He was ahead of the game. He told me, he said, Will, when your team is like, Beachwood had non-traditional football, you know.
Sure.
He said, what you do is you put your best athlete at quarterback.
Perfect.
And he was, and then that's when the Creel brothers.
Oh,
and
God. You had James Oliver, who was phenomenal. Jeff Oliver. And then you had Greg Eisenberg. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you had Creel. I mean, you know, you went on and on and on, quarterback after quarterback.
And no one thought that way. Like, he's like, you don't put your best athlete at quarterback. If you have a team where, if you can't put together the traditional offensive line that Beachwood probably couldn't put together that you need, or maybe that.
I feel you. I played center on the football team.
Yes,
5'7", 150, soaking wet. But now it was the Stone Age. It was a long time before you. But no, I know what you're saying. No, Beachwood didn't have the volume of people there. But so what was special about Sedmak for you as an athlete?
Well, what he was good at, he was very organized and very professional. Like he really, you really saw that he was like, he'd be on time. He was on time or early. He expected certain things from us, but he was accountable too. Like I never looked at him like, he's not doing or he can't do it. Like there were
like don't smoke, but I'm smoking.
Exactly. So he was very professional and he was fair to me and fair to, but at the end of the day, he still wanted to win.
Sure.
And he wanted the you know best people in the lineup.
And, meritocracy,
and like
I
that.
Love that,
and that's what it is.
Yeah.
And as long as I felt he was fair, there's some people. No one loves every head coach. No one loves every, you know, there's always going to be someone bitter about
they crucified the
end of their career. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So, it was, once again, he definitely cared a lot about me and my success. And I remember the reason why I got into Greco was he knew my career wasn't over.
Okay.
And he gave me the pamphlet to try and make the national team. And I just always remember, going to the trial for the Ohio Greco-Roman national team, and he would do all sorts of, and I wound up making that team.
That's
But he would also, he's constantly trying to push me. Like I remember, he gave me a pamphlet my sophomore year to Harvard. He said, "Fill this out. You know, your family's smart. You can, you know." And I remember filling out that, and I remember there was a reference to the Naval Academy that I was looking into because we needed to, but you needed a congressman to sponsor you.
Okay.
Which we would have been able to do because my brother was a congressional page under Lewis Stokes.
Oh, wow. Well, the famous.
Yes.
Yeah, long term.
Yeah. So,
and brother of Carl.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes,
our mayor.
Yes, sir.
During the very tumultuous years of the 60s.
Yes,
my goodness gracious.
Yes,
you talk about trailblazing family. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That Stoke family. Holy cow.
I been corresponding with one of their family members at the beginning of this process.
Yeah.
And, got a lot of information from him. And, you see a coach, someone like Semak, he understood I was going to go to college. He knew I wanted, and wrestling would help facilitate that as well.
Yes.
Or it could. And he worked hard
to
turn him in.
Urbis, I had Urbis in the legend, right?
Okay.
And he said that Ferguson said two things, but the most important thing about this conversation is use the sport, don't let the sport use you.
And that's what I try and tell people to now.
Yeah.
Try and tell people to do now.
Right.
I say don't. And it, I get it. There's some people that they get all in. If you want to be a D1 All-American national champ, there's a whole different lifestyle you have to live.
Oh, it's a full-time job.
It's a whole different lifestyle.
Full-time job, yeah.
And some people are born to do it. Some people can become that person to some degree. But if you're not that person at all, you have to think a little different way.
Yeah.
If you still want to compete, you still want to do, okay. You have to
and
have
get a rich experience of the process,
yes,
right?
Yes, you have to be a little honest with yourself at times,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
And but it's a tough. That's a tough balance because you think like, am I this person? Am I not? Like it's tough because you want to.
Well, you're a competitor.
Competitor.
Yeah, you're a competitor. So.
But you see a lot of times in college, you see just people finally get honest with themselves.
Right. And that's what D2 and D3 is for, I think, to some degree, right?
Yeah.
You know what
and
I mean? So
I wish more kids would take advantage of that.
I know. And, I love the program at Carroll. I love it.
I do too.
I love it. I love it at Case. I love it. You know, I love it at Mountain Union. I've had all those guys in.
Yeah.
They're terrific human beings and great coaches.
Yeah.
You know, so
like all three of those programs.
Oh my God,
really
fantastic. And the Baldwin Walls too. You know, so we're gonna take a break. Will, great first segment, and I want to talk a little bit about your college career and what you're doing now, moving forward. We'll be right back with Will Knight from the Shaker Red Raiders after this break. This is Coach Cimarroni. So our producer, Maverick Peters' dad, Scott Peters, was a heck of a high school wrestler, and he wrestled every day with the same guy, and they both made the state tournament. That guy was Jack Coslin. He's the owner of Serve Pro of Beechwood. Serve Pro of Beechwood is the industry leader in flood and fire cleanup and restoration, and they serve all of Northeast Ohio. But they're also short of staff. They're looking for team members. And if you're willing to work hard and help homeowners and businesses get their lives back in order and work with a former state qualifier, seek out Serve Pro of Beechwood. They will provide training, support, and of course, benefits. So if you're looking for that good entry-level position, seek Jack Coslin, the owner of Serve Pro of Beechwood at serveproofbeechwood.com. Jack Coslin, thank you.
Defense Soap at DefenseSoap.com. In the midst of our current health crisis, we at Blood Time want to thank Guy and Gus Seiko and the team at Defense Soap as a beacon of our protection. Body wipes, skin cleansers, bars of soap, shower gels, and disinfectant tablets. All this and more as Defense Soap is on the front line of our protection. Thanks to the Seiko family and their team at Defense Soap. Check them out for all your protection needs during these precarious times. Defense Soap at DefenseSoap.com.
This is Coach Cimarroni. I trust you are well and about to emerge after this most challenging of years. In all that we have collectively been through, we can still find that silver lining. That said, it is my pleasure and honor to announce a rekindling and reconnection to my longtime and good friends at the Montrose Auto Group. Mike Thompson, Chris Mills, and the incredible staff at Montrose Westside have afforded me and Razor, my company, an opportunity to present the outstanding lineup of high-quality vehicles in their stable. Jaguars, Range Rovers, Volvos, and a bevy of high-quality pre-owned vehicles are at our and your disposal. I look forward to being of service to you and your family, friends, company, and associates at your request and direction. Let's get together soon to discover how we may be a solution to your driving requirements and desires. Thanks so much and talk soon. This is Coach Cimarroni for the Montrose Auto Group's West Side Store. And we're back with Will Knight. Will, great first segment. I want to talk a little bit about now you get into college, you're at Ohio State, the Ohio State University, and you're wrestling with some amazing human beings. National champs and, yep. You know, I think Hellickson still there as the head coach.
He was there. He is not there. He had just got the job a couple of years prior. Okay. I think he got in 87.
Okay.
I'm going to say.
Okay.
And because then Mark Coleman transferred.
Sure.
And then that was his first national champ in 88. Yes.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if the Scove brothers was Russ's, but I know. I want to say, but
yeah, Jude a, and yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they can 86-87 was Scope. Yeah. But then, I was a tryout walk on.
Okay.
And most people, you know, like I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go to college. And right. I went 4-for-4 in my application. I applied to OU, Miami of Ohio,
right.
Michigan, and okay. Ohio State.
Okay.
And you know, back in the day, you had a reach and you had a safety, right? No that's what they always say.
Yeah.
So Michigan was my reach, and I got it. They had
Miami. What a school, right?
Yeah. And then I reached out to all those wrestling coaches, and no one got back to me.
Oh wow!
And I was just trying to figure out where I wanted to go, sure. and Michigan had called me the administration.
And it's interesting because, you know, Michigan had our Cleveland boy, Joe McFarland, and Miami had Chuck Angelo, another Cleveland boy. You know,
the Angelo thing, I was prepared to go to Miami if he had gotten back to me. That gotcha. Seemed like
we sent a lot of guys down there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
we had sent Ryan Peters, Aaron Grossman, Brian Zide, all those
and
guys.
And Pete Nathanson went there.
Oh, Pete, yeah.
So I was, you know, looking to, because I just knew I wasn't done wrestling. Mm-hmm. So after I found out what Michigan cost,
I
settled on going to Ohio State.
Gotcha.
My mother, I'm the youngest of seven, and my mother always wanted someone to go to Ohio State.
Yeah, be a Buckeye.
And
sure.
That they thought my, you know, she thought my sister Angela was gonna go.
Okay.
And but wound up being me, and I went and tried out. Like I had to pretty much. I the very first day of school.
Yeah.
I take a poli sci class, poli sci 200. I don't know what I.
Yeah,
what were you doing? Right, taking right, right, too. Right. That was the shaker arrogance in me.
Okay,
you know, I was like, we're smart. Yeah, we're coming down
that.
Here.
So I got that poli sci
200.
Right,
and then, but you know, I'm wearing my day one of school clothes,
gotcha.
And then Kevin Randleman walks into class.
Oh boy,
and he walks in. He's wearing the total opposite of what I'm wearing. He's wearing a string tank top.
Yeah,
and like some tight. Shorts and walks in.
Yeah, and he's Randleman.
Yeah, and he's Randleman. Yeah. And he just came off of being the national runner-up.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is the fall of, you know, he got pinned in the national finals.
Yeah.
And I see him, I'm like, all right, that's Randleman. Let me. Yeah. You know. So then when I, at the end of class, but it's funny, he sat in the front of the class. He sat in the front.
Yeah.
And then when we get out of class, I kind of hustle to get up to him. I'm like, hey, man, you came around. Like, I remember he's like, hey, I'm with you. He's like, I know who you are. I'm like, he said, yeah, you beat my cousin at Brecksville. I beat his cousin in the semifinals at Brecksville tournament.
I love that.
My junior year, upset. I pulled an upset on him.
I love it.
And then, and Randall was there. I didn't know.
Yeah.
And then, And then from that point, I said, yeah, you know, I'm trying to walk on. He's like, what, you ain't going to be on the team? I said, well, you know, I've tried to talk to the head coach. I don't know what it is.
Right.
And he's like, come with me. So, I start with the first part where I messed this up, where I said, you know what made me come here? I said, I was watching the national finals and I saw you wrestling. He's like, I don't know if language he said.
Yeah.
He's like, that shit ain't gonna happen again. Because he got pinned, right? I remember he looked at me, I was like, all right, man.
That's right.
So then so he's like, come with me. So he takes me to St. John's Arena.
Okay.
And we go into the bowels. I'm like, oh, how do you get to just go in this place or whatever? So we go in this training room. He takes me into St. John's basketball teams, practicing. He's waving at like Jimmy Jackson. Like, it's like, kind of crazy. Like, he's such a rock star. I'm like, you're a wrestler.
Yeah.
And he is a rock star.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we go in there and they had this, in the training room, they had this machine called the Ubi.
Okay.
Which is like a bike for your arms.
Sure.
It is the toughest workout.
Yep.
Ever, right?
It's like so rowing.
They do a 10-minute workout on the Ubi. He said, all right, you gotta do this 10-minute workout with me. Mind you, I have like a button-down t-shirt. Shirt. Yeah, I'm dressed nice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he puts me through this and I'm going through this 10-minute workout. And you couldn't drop below this line. He's like, you stop below this line, you're starting over again. And this is the hardest work I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And then after I'm done, I'm soaked in sweat.
Oh my god.
In my like dress clothes, and then he's like, all right, I'm gonna talk to Russ for you. And then he leaves, and I'm in November. It's like, what?
And then
so then, you know, after that, I never heard from him again. He like dropped that class. I had to get ready for the How Open, and every freshman was just like, man, what are you doing this for? You're gonna lose, everyone, because everyone's telling them, like, it is the toughest preseason tournament, and I had to have some sort of showing to have a chance again,
yeah.
So when I get there, I remember Dave Range was coaching me.
Oh my!
And then I was, I just kind of start winning matches there.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets to a point where then I wrestle J. Michael.
Mm.
Now I just remember, J. Michael, like Jim Jordan was coaching J. Michael.
Yeah.
And then Dave Range was coaching me. And then I had J. Michael on the road. He was a scholarship athlete. I had J. Michael on the ropes, and I just remember at the end of that, Jim came up to me like, man, you know, it looks like we're going to put you on the team.
Oh, you know?
I was like, all right, cool. But I still went eliminated. That was my first.
And then
I kept winning some matches. And then at the end, I lose to Pat Burdies from Menor.
Stud.
In the match before placing. I always remember it. It was at Ohio.
Yeah.
And then the only other people, like Charlie Bex, made it one other round further.
Wow.
And it was me. Like, even J. Michael had lost and lost. Like, I wound up making it further in that. Like, I was two matches from placing.
Gotcha.
And then all the other friends were 0-2, 1-2. And I was still in the mix.
The eyes were open.
So, and at that point, then they let me on the team, and I was able to start in the winter quarter.
Right.
After everything.
Right. And so you had a career there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you made the national a couple times, right?
I made the national tournament my senior year. I was ranked, top 10 in the country.
Okay.
I was third in the Big Ten my senior year, but my redshirt sophomore year, I was bouncing around a lineup. I was trying to find my space.
You wrestled heavyweight one time.
I wrestled 190. Yes. Yeah, I wrestled.
You're not a 190, brother.
No, not at all. I wrestled eight of the ten weight classes year.
I'll be done.
Eight of the ten in my career, but I wrestled five weight classes that season.
Wow.
Year. I cut
talk about next man up. You're the next man up.
I cut to 34.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I remember, I don't really remember that day as much. It was so crazy how much weight I cut.
Yeah.
And how, like, I'm 6 foot.
Anymore,
No, you can't at all. No. And I remember I wrestled Dan Carcelli at Cleveland State. And that is one match I don't remember anything about. I don't remember the day. I still don't remember recovering.
Yeah.
Then I wrestled 142 at the Ohio Open.
Okay.
Then we didn't wrestle anything at 150, but then I traveled with the team as a backup to Oregon. Okay. We had this team over winter. Over winter break.
Yeah.
And Mitch Clark was a freshman on the team.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And
just talked to him.
But then what happened was he became ineligible.
Okay.
So I remember I wrestled 158 in an event there.
Wow.
And then with Mitch Clark becoming ineligible, we came back with a spot at 167.
Oh Holy cow.
So then when I came back, I was the starting 67 pounder.
Oh my God. So you were eating, man.
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah. And I kind of finally grew into, like, I got over trying to be a weight cutter like that.
Yeah.
And then I.
What are you walking around with right now?
Probably 170, between 175, 180.
Yeah, you look lean and mean, man. Yeah. You know? So you look lean and mean, man. So, that's your experience there. And was it a, was there a positive there that you took that said, you know what, I can do this stuff. I can. And then what did you take with it, you know, from that experience?
What I learned, what I fell in love with was the brotherhood of, of the guys that I met. You meet people from so many different places,
right?
You know, I have friends from West Virginia, and like you mentioned, Ms. Clark from upstate New York, right. And then Nick Nutter from Medina,
yep.
And then like my buddy Eric Smith from Dayton, and sure. Like you just meet these different people from different places,
yeah.
And you just see how different everyone grew up. But then the one thing you guys just wrestle together and you bleed right. together and right. you sweat together,
yeah.
And that's the age that, you know, you're growing into your manhood and yeah. doing it with some other hardworking people and, you know, those relationships I have forever.
Sure.
And I wouldn't trade any of that experience for the world.
That's a fantastic, it's poignant, right, mm-hmm. to you and to us as athletes, but also just as people.
Yeah.
Was there somebody special? You know, was there somebody that said something to you or did something to you that just stood out and said, man, that's wild. That's something.
It's a combination of a lot. Like it's a lot more because I understood when my dad, I used to always want to be a pro baseball player. Like,
okay.
Like I grew up and my dad would just tell me like, look, I grew up Willie Mays. Like, he's like, and he's like, he was the greatest athlete he's ever been around. Like, and at the end of the day, my dad was like, pretty much, you're not that. And I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty high bar, dad. But,
it's like one of the top five of all time.
Yeah. But I remember being on the varsity team and being in that lineup and mm-hmm. then, Russ speaking really well of me at one of our banquets, and my dad really understood. Like, he's like, Russ Hellickson.
Okay, gotcha.
And he was, you know, he kind of saying, he looked at me as a son and things like that. And my dad really, and my dad was never a person that would be like, I need another man to be a father figure to me.
Right. Don't do any harm to my kid.
Exactly.
Don't tear down anything.
I have three older brothers and a very, you know, and my father was there, you know, right. I didn't need a father figure particularly.
Yeah.
But my dad appreciated that.
Sure.
That he knew this man was going, you know, that this guy, that he had someone that he felt could look out after us.
Right.
And then also that, you know, when my dad would also during the summer kind of brag on, be like, yeah, my son Russell's at the house. That seems, and I never really looked at it that way. Because like I said, when we talked about our fathers, like, they don't give praise on things. But then I started to realize, like, my dad.
They wanted to pull it back to keep it humble,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, but him realizing that, like, wow, that was really special hearing him talk about.
Right.
Like, almost brag about him. Like, he wrestled. Yeah. And I didn't even, I was like, wow, I guess it is. So looking back, I really appreciate
it. So
there's
his love for you, man, mm-hmm. right? You know, and that's a beautiful thing. Right?
Yeah.
And so that's your blood time moment, maybe.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was always through your life.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you didn't need a moment. You just had it
the
whole time, you know? And with that transformation now as a fully formed adult, right?
Yeah.
You've made some real determinations in the last couple of months to run for Congress.
Yes.
And that's a special mission.
Yes, it is.
So tell us a little bit about what motivated you to do that and what do you want to do with it once you win?
Well, what I understood was we're going through a process with a legal issue with Ohio State, and we had an inappropriate doctor. And then reaching out to the politicians that we've known and some we don't know, and you see how some just sort of turn their back on us.
Wow.
But my state rep just spoke with me once, and she said, she's the only one that talked to me, and she said, well, Will, government's supposed to work for you, not against you.
Yes.
And that stuck with me.
Yeah.
And then when I found that the seat was being vacated, and then they were talking about the inevitability of some candidates.
Right.
It's going to be either this person who's known that has Bernie money, or it's going to be this person who the establishment Dems are behind.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know what, F that.
Yeah.
I said that. And I said,
doesn't it make
you
sick to your stomach?
Yeah, that they just said, and I said, this seat,
Like, go home.
Yeah, this seat is so historic, so important.
Sure.
And the right person needs to represent this area.
Right.
And it's just not a certain part of this area, this whole area.
Yes.
And I knew that I could do that.
Right.
I believe I can represent the people of Seven Hills and the people of Euclid.
I agree.
Or the people who live in Gordon Square or the people who live in Bath.
Right.
And so that is what I just said. You know what? I believe I'm the person for this seat.
It is a definitely diverse and dynamic footprint that you're going to be representing, no question about it. And that's it's going to take thoughtful leadership, not only thoughtful leadership, but solution oriented.
Yeah,
and a person that can reach across to the opposite side and say, "Let's work together."
Yes, like I think like that on a regular, and I think like that as a coach to try and really figure out because how to get kids to maximize their talent. And then at the end, sometimes you look and say, okay, that's as far as I can have taken this kid. So I
because you got to have somebody willing to listen, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I mean? You know, so you can't force somebody to be a state champ. They got to want to be, right?
No.
And then they got to put the
and
work
then,
in.
And yeah. then you got to be lucky.
Boy,
and
look,
you
let's
be,
go. Absolutely.
And you almost got to be born that person.
Sure.
It's a lot being, you know, dealing with some of the people that I've worked with.
Yeah.
And, but I take a really, I take pride in the diversity of the people that I know and have relationships with and being able to really communicate with people and listen.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people aren't listening right now.
Right.
And people are just waiting to talk or talking
or they're
at
waiting,
people.
Or they're waiting for that one thing to say that then you're completely cut off.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's amazing, right?
Yeah.
You can have this in 40-year body of work and you say one silly thing that could be benign.
Yeah.
10 days ago,
but
became a match point today, and you're done. You know,
and
it's crazy.
They always say that, you know, you build a lifetime creating, you know, developing a reputation.
Right.
And then in one instant, 1 minute, you can destroy all of it.
Exactly.
Right. I told that to one of my kids who got into, like, something like he might have, like, hit a fire alarm at a wrestling tournament and then turned into this thing, right?
Right.
And I was like, wow. A lot of people really loved you as a guy, but now you have this little thing about yourself.
This
like,
is you're is that he, guy.
You're that guy.
You're that guy, the fire alarm guy.
So I wanted to tell you, I'm like, so
don't be that guy.
All the way up until that point,
people
were like, you're the great, like, man, he's a great kid. He's a great kid. Yeah, now there's a little morsel that you gave them.
There's a pink flag going up.
And it may tie, you know, those things tie to you.
And it takes 10 times the work to get rid of that, right?
Exactly.
It's so weird.
Exactly.
I mean, we're a fascinating species, are we not?
We definitely build up and then we tear down.
We tear down.
Like the comeback story.
Sure.
So I've always, you know, that's why I'm not trying to pretend that I'm a perfect human being.
Yeah. Who is?
Never going to. I'm not going to say that I have all the answers because I don't.
Gotcha.
And anyone who says they have all the answers.
Run.
Exactly.
Because they don't.
So, you know, I'm not going to pretend to be the smartest person in the room, but, but I'm going to keep smart people around me to help me out.
Good stuff.
You know, and, you know, that is going to be a collaborative effort for this whole district for us to turn this thing around.
Well, you know, Will, that's why I really love what you're all about, you know, and I've always admired you from afar as an athlete and also as a coach, now friendly competitor. And so I think what you're saying really makes a lot of sense, particularly for today. We need solutions, and we need to reach across the aisle and work together because we're all Americans.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what prefix we have. It ends with American.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that said, we like to end our segments, particularly coming out of this insane year we've gone through, right? The tough year. I just interviewed my three captains, you know, and I want to memorialize what they went through, right, as athletes and as seniors, you know. Mm-hmm. I want you to leave the audience with two things, word of encouragement and a word of inspiration from your mind and your heart.
As hard as you think you may have it, someone does have it worse. And then it's very obvious, but we tend to forget that.
Sure.
But at the end of the day, whatever you're going through, for the most part, you just got to get up and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
As hard as that is, like the last 3 years, I wouldn't wish my last 3 years on anybody.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, I wouldn't trade it in either. Like, you know, both my parents passed, and my sister passed, and we have this huge lawsuit with Ohio State and a lot of things going on. And it's very stressful, and we're trying to coach in COVID.
Yeah.
But I'm still here.
Yeah, you are.
I'm still pushing forward. I'm going to fight for people. I'm always going to fight for people and fight for my kids. I'm going to fight for, you know, my wrestlers. I'm going to fight for my friends.
Right.
I'm going to try and help people best I can. Right. At the end of the day, I'm not perfect.
Right.
And no one is, but we all should just be trying to work to make things better together if we can.
Yeah.
And I believe that we can get to a better space again if we just start listening to each other.
Yeah.
And also if we can... And if people are willing to take some of the criticism, but also
look in the mirror.
Yeah,
look in the mirror. That's what wrestling does, right? We have to look in the mirror, because if we don't, we're an honest sport, man. Yeah. There's nowhere to hide, you know?
It really isn't.
And it's based on mirror.
It really isn't.
You know? So
once again, yeah, just we could probably get back to something. But, you know, this record, I mean, we needed it.
Sure.
We needed to tear some of this down.
Yeah.
And then so we can
build it.
It was
a slap in the face, man.
Yeah.
But it woke us up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes like when you get cuffed before you go out on the mat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly. And they do well.
Exactly.
And I've done that to a number of kids. But, well, Will, I really appreciate this.
Oh,
I really appreciate you coming in. So.
No problem, anytime.
Well, we just had a great interview with Will Knight, businessman, coach, and now candidate for the 11th Congressional District for the U.S. Congress. Will Knight, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Pete.
This is Coach Cimarroni with Will Knight. We are all blood. Love to all. Blood time, Coach Cimarroni. Hey, have you ever wondered how the ultra wealthy grow their real estate portfolio so fast and furious? Have you ever heard of the infinite banking concept? Learn how you can become your own bank and build out your own real estate portfolio like the pros. Like the ultra wealthy. Call Ed Knezovich or Ryan Miller at Next Level Continuing Education at 614-648-2440. Learn how to purchase investment real estate without spending a dollar of your own capital through Next Level Continuing Education. 614-648-2440.
This is Dominic Abinader. You've just heard another episode of the Blood Time Podcast. Check out more at maverickpodcasting.com.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.